The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Style, Spirit, Soul. Steeped in tradition, homecoming celebrations at historically black colleges and universities reflect palpable love, pride, and excellence. As they return in full force this fall, we take a deep look at the power and passion of these uniquely stylish and undoubtedly sacred events, akin to the way we use the term homegoing to describe our funerals and send-off services. The fact that we can go back to the place where we might have found our voice, our sense of style, and our sense of self, perhaps accompanied by friends, a spouse, or even children, is beautiful. For people who too often feel rootless in a country they helped build and powerless in a nation they helped make wealthy, it's priceless to have an annual place, experience, and community that always feels like a safe place. As students, faculty, alumni, and those who are simply curious return to HBCU campuses nationwide for these cherished events this fall, many for the first time since the start of the pandemic lockdowns, they can look forward to embracing the past, appreciating the present, and anticipating the future. HBCU homecomings are one of the quintessential demonstrations of Black joy, says Matthews. That's because there really is no place like home. The next article is titled, Women Shaping the Future of Menswear. These women-led menswear brands and their founders are shifting the tides of the fashion industry. Over the last half decade, genderless fashion seems to have come back into style alongside some of the most popular trends. Handbags and crossbody satchels are now universal accessories. Flare trousers are having a resurgence for both men and women, and it's still undecided whether crop tops look better on him, her, or them. Though we know for sure they are fair game for everyone. While we have accepted that clothing expresses no gender, there are also no limits on who can design a certain category of clothes. But while the perception of the garment itself is truly up to the beholder, there are some pieces that are created specifically for male or female body types. Black women have been longtime leaders among entrepreneurs, executives, and ladies in charge, and it seems like the rest of the world is finally catching on. Girls just do it better. Even when it comes to designing menswear, it's best not to question the magic behind the divine feminine mystique. But for more insight on how women are able to maintain superiority in an industry where men are the majority, we have connected with the founders of three Black women-owned fashion brands that are pushing menswear forward. Grace Wells Bonner, founder and designer of Wells Bonner, is one of today's most gifted menswear innovators. With her independent fashion house, she uses her mixed-race British and Jamaican heritage as artistic fodder for her luxury designs. Since launching the house in 2014, Wells Bonner has become one of the select creatives that the fashion industry keeps its eyes on. She has received prestigious awards and honors from distinguished organizations, including the British Fashion Awards and the Council of Fashion Designers of America, CFDA. My interest in menswear started from an interest in traditional European sartorialism and wardrobe, Wells Bonner says. I like the formality and framework of traditional menswear and tailoring because it offers a point of view that one can disrupt. Given this approach, it's no wonder the brand's collections usually include fluid silhouettes, cultural nods, and innovative tailoring. The Wells Bonner dressed man is equal parts stylish, effortlessly cool and debonair, and he's able to maintain that essence even in casual and athletic attire. Thanks to Wells Bonner's partnership with Adidas, an essential point to my practice is research, she says. I see that as the foundation to everything I do. I usually find a point of reference or something to focus around as a way of exploring an idea or understanding an environment. I'm very interested in presenting a multiplicity of perspectives. When a talent is as refreshing and distinct as Wells Bonner, it's natural to want to know who or what are her main sources of inspiration. She shares that some of the men who have impacted her menswear aesthetic include Kerry James Marshall, David Hammons, and Terry Atkins. The common denominator among all three is that they are or were fine artists, which sheds light on the artisanal spirit present in Wells Bonner's creations. Ever since trailblazing designer Virgil Abloh passed away last November, Wells Bonner's name has traveled through the fashion industry's grapevines as one of the few designers who could step in to lead menswear at Louis Vuitton. Abloh's former role, however, Wells Bonner values her independence. My current focus is on making Wells Bonner an important luxury brand from the future that represents an Afro-Atlantic perspective, she states. Meanwhile, down south in Atlanta is where the first Todd Patrick retail store lives. At first glance, it could be mistaken for just another fashion-forward menswear shop. But what makes Todd Patrick stand out is a woman's touch. No one really knows we are behind Todd Patrick until they meet us, says Desiree Nicole, who runs the line along with her business partner, Gabriella Paulino. We never put a face to the brand or put ourselves in the front of the brand. We want the clothes to speak for themselves. In addition to being business partners, Nicole and Paulino are also united by love. And Todd Patrick happens to be a labor of their love. I was sleeping on a couch when I first met Gab, and I told her I wanted to get into fashion, and she was like, okay, Nicole recalls. Who would have thought we would own a store together? At this point, we can do anything. While Nicole dreams up designs and create marketing concepts for the brand, Paulino keeps things in order by handling the logistics as chief of operations. I feel like working with Des is easy, even though I know all couples can't say working with their partner is easy, says Paulino. She's the crazy brain, like all over the place, and I'm the super organized one, and I think that balance just works really well for us. For Todd Patrick, most designs are constructed within the framework of traditional menswear silhouettes. But the brand's advanced use of textiles and colors make the pieces unique, as do the slight adjustments to classic silhouettes to make them cropped or boxy. Nicole, who named the brand after her brother, had a previous career styling NFL players, so she was comfortable with presenting her take on menswear even before launching Todd Patrick. Sometimes people assume that as women, we are obligated to design for women, Paulino says. However, she points out, two women designing menswear makes more sense than one may think. Speaking from a heterosexual relationship perspective, I think a woman's point of view is always taken into consideration when men get dressed. So who better to design for them than us, Nicole explains. As the partners of Todd Patrick continue to foster an ever-growing community and expand the brand's reach, they are also aiming to evolve the menswear area beyond what we are used to seeing. I think we're going to move into more of a flow space, Nicole says about the future of the industry. It will be very comfortable fabrics and will move out of the structured space. The duo will show us exactly what they mean as they are taking Todd Patrick to one of fashion's main stages for the brand's New York Fashion Week debut during the September 2022 cycle. Across the pond, one of London's most celebrated emerging designers is Bianca Saunders, the founder and designer of her eponymous label. She has been running her brand for only 5 years, but she's managed to build a reputable name in Europe and in the United States. After launching Bianca Saunders in 2017, she was singled out by the British Fashion Council as one to watch in 2018, and 2 years later, Saunders was listed on Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30 list. Since then, she has won the 32nd ANDAM Grand Prix Fashion Award in 2021 and hosted her first two runway shows in Paris. Although winning awards is a great accomplishment, when asked about the most fulfilling experiences of her career journey thus far, Saunders responds, "Probably working with consistent people like my fit model. I work with him to see how he reacts to my clothing because he's not necessarily a model. He's just a normal guy that I thought would look really good in the clothes. Seeing how he speaks about the clothes and knowing that it works well with normal people is something that I'm always interested in. Though offering something new to the fashion business may get you in the door, finding community seems to be the key to longevity and success. Take it from Saunders, a Royal College of Art graduate. There's no rule book for this industry to tell you how to start a luxury brand," she says. "How I started my brand was by building my own community. The friendship groups that I have are all a part of my growth in a way, and they are also how I create my own culture, like having my friends DJ at my parties or working with directors and photographers who are my friends." Aside from fostering her own community, Saunders says she's been fortunate to have supportive experiences with other industry professionals. She mentions designers like Craig Green, Wells Bonner, and Jack Emus, all of whom have been especially good to her. And for the past year, Saunders has been receiving mentorship from Balenciaga's CEO, Cedric Charbit, as a result of winning the 32nd ANDAM Grand Prix Fashion Award. I think the most important advice Cedric gave me was to show more of myself and make sure people are more interested in me than in the brand, and just being more confident in that, Saunders shares. Understanding exactly how his business works was a nice way to identify where I want to go in the future. As she pushes menswear forward with her feminine touch and unconventional cuts, Saunders stays focused on her overarching vision. When I'm designing or creating something, Saunders says, I'm trying to explain how I see my world and how I want people to see the future of what it means to a British Caribbean creative. That's something I'm constantly discovering and experimenting with. The next article is titled Courageous Care. By talking with the chiefs who live among us, Essence CEO Caroline Wanga explores Black women as chief executive officers of home, culture, and community, and focuses on helping every Black woman recognize the chief that already exists within her. The leading cause of bankruptcy in the U.S. is medical debt, which means that the state of your health determines the stature of your wealth. It's why Margaret Mary Wilson, M.D., is leading the charge to support our health needs and strengthen our wellness narrative. As Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President of America's largest health insurer, United Health Group, Wilson is focused on building health equity through clinical innovation, including expanding access to care, lowering costs, improving outcomes, and encouraging patient self-advocacy. She joined the UHG organization in 2008, but long before she became a top executive at the insurance giant, Wilson dreamed of becoming a doctor back in her native Nigeria. Her ambition was met with, "It's not a profession for girls," opposition. Yet Wilson persisted, enrolling in medical school at just 16 years old and graduating by the age of 21. Here, she shares lessons of leadership, global community, and what she's learned about creating an impact. Caroline asked the question, who is Dr. Margaret Mary Wilson? Margaret Mary Wilson responded by saying, I'm Victoria's daughter. I will never let myself forget that. Victoria was my mother. She died 2 years ago. She was a single, divorced mother. My father had walked out on her. She couldn't read or write. She struggled financially, and she was poor after my father left. But the one thing she knew was that she wasn't going to let me walk her path. And that's who I am at the core. My mother put me through medical school, and I became a doctor in Nigeria. It was a hard life. Doctors weren't paid much, and I didn't have a lot of money. But that started my search for answers. Something happens when, as a young doctor in your 20s, babies are dying, mothers are dying. It pushed me to search for more, and I owe my journey in medicine to that. Caroline asked the question, how does a young person whose mother did everything she could to provide for her, but probably always felt like there wasn't enough to do it all, become a young person who believes she can be a doctor? Wilson replied, quite frankly, I didn't always believe I could be a doctor. One of my uncles asked me what I wanted to be, and at the time, it sounded like a good thing to say. I was 7 years old and said, a doctor. But he then said to me, oh, you can't do that. It's not a profession for girls. And at that point, I didn't know what it would take, but I was determined to prove him wrong. you throw a bit of grit and determination, and step by step, you get there. Caroline asked, how did you go through the process of becoming a doctor as a Black woman in a field that doesn't have that much texture of identities and representation? Wilson responded, well, first I went to medical school in Nigeria, so we were all Black, so that took care of that part of things. But we were a class of about 200, and only 30 of us were women, so it was a hard walk. What it did show me, however, was that medicine is not impossible for women, because there was nothing gender specific about it. I was determined to do something, I didn't know what, to increase gender diversity. And it's fortunate that decades later, I work with an enterprise that's doing just that. Just months ago, United Health Group committed $100 million to advance diversity and equity in the clinical workforce over the next 10 years. Caroline asked the question, why would a company of that size and scale decide that a $100 million commitment is a way to help, to make sure that the way that healthcare is provided is really working for all? Because many of us as Black people have had issues getting through the healthcare system, finding care, getting good care, having coverage, having our doctor not care enough because we're Black, and everything in between. How does the $100 million change that story? Wilson responded, it changes the story fundamentally, because most people are like me. I'm Black, an African immigrant, a lesbian, a legally married woman living in the state of Texas. And when my wife and I moved to Texas from New York, we needed a doctor. Who did we look for? A doctor who got us. A doctor who looked like us. A doctor who represented us in one way or another. The people we serve as clinicians, we need to look like them. It saves lives. So when you see United committing to that amount, it's because we recognize that if we change the healthcare system, if we're going to transform healthcare, then it must be equitable and the workforce must be diverse. If you look across America today, a Black woman who goes in to have a baby is about 3 times more likely to die than an Hispanic or white woman. Those are the glaring statistics. Caroline then asked, how should we navigate the healthcare system? Wilson responded, I'm sure you could tell me what was in your bank account to the last cent, but I bet very few people could tell me what their blood pressure was this morning. When we think about wealth and we think about power, let's not forget health. Even though I don't have a lot of hair, one thing I'm really picky about is my hair cut. I'm not going to let my barber get it wrong. I will also empower myself when it comes to my health. The next article is titled Power Play. Two of Atlanta's most powerful Black-owned startups, The Gathering Spot and Greenwood, join forces to become one. Jay-Z and Beyonce said it best, what's better than one millionaire? How about two? Especially and most importantly, if they're the same hue as you. What started as a small idea while one Black man was attending Georgetown University Law Center would later morph into a trailblazing deal, creating the largest financial empowerment and community building platform for Blacks and minorities. That's what happened when two of Atlanta's most powerful Black startups joined forces. Greenwood, a digital banking platform designed to address the needs of Black and Latino communities, acquired ownership of The Gathering Spot back in May of this year. And one of the most powerful Black-led, Black-acquired acquisition deals of our time. A mix between the infamous Soho House and your favorite annual homecoming celebration, The Gathering Spot has established itself as a cultural institution offering event spaces and a co-working hub for Black professionals to work, meet, and socialize. It's where celebrities come to hang and where deals are being made on a daily basis. While the club has physical spaces in Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., its broader community features networking events in cities such as New York, Chicago, Detroit, Houston, and Charlotte, North Carolina. About 4,000 of the Gathering Spot's 12,000 paying members, whose dues run from $100 to $250 a month, are in Atlanta, the city that put the club on the map, literally and figuratively. The Gathering Spot and Greenwood coming together is incredibly impactful for our community and our culture, says The Gathering Spot co-founder Ryan Wilson. This is Black on Black M&A, mergers and acquisitions. Greenwood's founders include Michael Rinder, aka rapper Killer Mike, former Atlanta Mayor Andrew Young, and entrepreneur Ryan Glover. The company, named after the first Black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that racist whites destroyed in 1921, was founded in 2020 at the height of the protest movement over police violence. According to the Wall Street Journal, the company currently reports more than $40 million in assets and more than 30,000 account holders. The sale price of the acquisition was not disclosed, but both companies said the newly combined entity will allow them to scale up by building a Black-owned firm that can offer unique services and experiences to its customers. Our work together now is focused on continuing to create products and services for our membership community, creating informative content, and advancing our mission to close the wealth gap in this country and level the playing field, says Wilson. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.